Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to another Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here after the Wizards fall in Game 1, 123-111 to the Celtics. Here to help me figure out what the hell just went wrong in the second half is the guy you know, Kevin Sheehan, ESPN 980. Of course, the Morning Drive show on ESPN 980. He hosts with Chris Cooley. Kevin and I are not doing this podcast from a grocery store, though. We are doing this more conventionally over the phone. Kevin, thank you for
much better.
That was a early highlight of the first year of the podcast, though. Not going to lie about that.
Yeah, nothing like sitting in the Safeway cafe doing a podcast. That was great.
I legitimately have had several people this year mention that to me, so it definitely it definitely resonated, or it definitely stuck out. So much stuck out of this game today for the Wizards. They lose the opener, and they lose a game that they started with a 16-0 lead. But the bigger concern, even beyond losing that lead and losing the game, is that they may have lost Markieff Morris. He left in the first half with an ankle injury. We'll get to what's the latest report on that is in a second, and I'll go through a bunch of the stats in a moment. But Kevin's going to help us go through the who, what, where, when, why of it all. So, Kevin, let's just start off with the basics. Where did it all go wrong? What stood out to you why they lost?
Well, it went wrong in the third quarter with a lot of turnovers. They missed free throws in this game, and they were really overmatched, especially on the pick and roll, pick and pop, with Horford and Isaiah Thomas in particular. And it's not that both of them would end up with the score, but if there was help, then that somebody was open in a corner. And the Celtics shot 19 of 39 from behind the three-point line off that pick and pop, pick and roll action. And I'll say this, Ben, because I've heard a lot of people saying after the game, well, you know, Boston's not going to make 19 threes again. That may be accurate, but hoping they don't shoot it well isn't going to get the Wizards 4 wins. The Wizards are going to have to figure out a defensive game plan to get stops. And by the way, when they get stops, get into transition where that's, you know, where they thrive, and it was one of the lowest fast break transition type games for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the 3-point shooting, first off, the 19 threes was matched the Celtics playoff record, so that says a lot. But if you look at what they've done over the course of the year against the Wizards, they've been making threes. We'll get to Jay Crowder in a second. He was the biggest culprit, though, 6 of 8 from deep. But yeah, 19 of 39. They were hot there, and they had it all going on. That is a problem. And look, defending the three-point line has been a problem for the Wizards all year. But I think for me, even beyond all that, the Markieff Morris injury, which came basically it was like 43-42. He had to stay in the game to shoot the free throws, and then he immediately left. He looked like he really badly twisted his ankle. Sounds like, from what we can tell, He's saying he's going to play next game, but he sounds like he was limping as well, so we'll see. But in any event, the way you beat the Celtics, if you're the Wizards, you beat them up on the boards, and you have that guy who's aggressive and physical and can deal with your Jay Crowders of the world and can guard guys in the perimeter and guard guys inside. When he was in there, the Wizards were doing that. The Wizards, here's a couple stats. The rebounds finished at 38-38. Sounds like a push, right? Except the Wizards were up 14-5 in the first quarter with Morris. Second chance points. The game finished Celtics 22-21, but the Wizards were up 10-0 after the first quarter. Those two stats are how the Bulls started to beat the Celtics in that last series before things went awry. That's how you beat the Celtics. And without Morris, they had no shot on the boards anymore, no matter what Boston threw out there.
Yeah, well, remember, you're going to have more chances at rebounds when the other team misses shots. So that was part of it. But I agree with you. It was a big turning point. I don't know that it would have made a massive difference in the final outcome. I will say this, where they really get hurt not having Morris is there in the fourth quarter. You can't have Gortat involved in the pick and roll, pick and pop game with Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford. It's really a mismatch. They were overmatched in that, and that's where if Morris is at the five, you've got a better shot of guarding that. Now, the other thing is you can't waste possessions. You've got to match them scoring. And when you had the 8 or 9 turnovers or whatever it was in the third quarter, just the wasted possessions where you never got a shot, some of those turnovers really sort of those that we see occasionally from John and Bradley, where they're not necessarily forced, they're more sort of just sloppy, casual, nonchalant kind of plays. You just can't afford that in this series. You're going to have to score 110 to 115, to win, these games, which I think they're capable of doing, but the turnover count has to be low. You can't miss 9 free throws, and then the pick and roll defense, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it's tough if you don't have Morris the rest of the way, because that was an utter overmatched situation there on a lot of those possessions in the fourth quarter, especially when they drew within, three at 101-98, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, once you get past Wall and Beal, I mean, I think the third most important guy on this team is Markieff Morris. Not saying he's the third best player necessarily, but just all the things he can do, the fact that he can guard guys out on the perimeter, inside, he's that tough guy.
No doubt.
He gives you, and when you take him away, this is people have heard me say this 100 times. This goes back to the Jan Mahimi signing, who obviously Jan Mahimi did not play again today, and I don't even know what else to say about that. But even if Jan Mahimi was active, you still would have the issue of you can't play Mahimi and Gortat together, especially if the team is going perimeter. So even if Mahimi was there, they still don't have somebody
No, that's right.
to really deal with these guys. And Boston went very small. They put basically Crowder at the four with three guards a lot, and that just ate the Wizards up.
I actually think, Ben, that if Morris is hurt, you're going to have to think about going with Jason Smith. When Horford's at the five and they're spacing the floor, and they space it so well, they're so well coached. And because Jason Smith, and I know not everybody agrees with this, but I actually think he may be a better pick and roll, pick and pop defender than even at times Morris has been. He's got to be aggressive. He's got to be confident. But when they drew to within 101-98, missing those free throws really hurt because it could have gotten them a little bit closer. Beal missed a free throw in that stretch. Porter missed one in that stretch. Gortat missed one in that stretch. Jason Smith actually missed one during that stretch that sort of went halfway down and came out. But 19 threes, I think just hoping that they don't shoot it well is not the formula for 4 wins out of the next 6 games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. I'm sort of making it sound like the Wizards got destroyed in the second half, which they essentially kind of did. But the start of the fourth quarter, they did manage to come back, and they got it down to what, 3 or 4 points?
Yeah, and then they just could not guard. They couldn't. I mean, you saw it. They got Gortat into every pick and roll, and whether it was Horford scoring, Isaiah Thomas scoring, or a pass to Horford leading to an open shooter in the corner because you helped, it was just a disaster. And that's the biggest problem. Now, we know that defensively, it's not like all of a sudden the Wizards are going to become a different team defensively against a great offensive team, which is why I still think ultimately you're going to have to win this series with better offense. And those turnovers at the beginning of the third quarter, first half of the third quarter, were devastating. Because after you gave up the big lead, which I expected, I didn't think a 20-3, 17-point lead was going to hold up over 4 quarters. But they sort of extended it back out to 7, then went to the break with a 5-point lead. And that early third period was really crucial in sort of changing the context of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so Yeah, I mean, things were so going so. I guess it does. Yeah, I just keep harping on the Morris injury only because things were going so nice early. And obviously, basketball, we know it's a game of runs. Even at 16-0, it's not like the Celtics weren't going to come back. But you just saw the game plan unfolding for the Wizards. Beat them up on the boards, have Wall and Beal do their thing. And Gortat was really effective early as well. And take advantage of Isaiah Thomas's lack of size wherever you can. But once Morris went away, and this ultimately goes back to the issue with this team, the way it's built, even if everybody is healthy, that you take those starters off the court, and who do you put in? You could maybe put in a Bogdanovich to shoot, maybe you could put in a I don't know, Oubre for some defense. But when you're starting the second half and like this is your group, it's much easier to get exposed, and I think you got to give Boston credit for doing that. Let's get to the when of it all, as in when the hell did Jay Crowder turn into Kevin Durant? He kills the Wizards. He's now, I think, 16 for 26 from three this year. I've always thought he's one of the more interesting small forwards in the league because he's such a tough physical guy, the way a lot of those Marquette guys are. But man, if he's making threes and he kills the Wizards, that makes him just an unbelievably tough guy when you already have to deal with Isaiah Thomas, you already have to deal with Al Horford. If Jay Crowder, he had help today from three, it wasn't just him. But man, if he's doing that, this is going to be really hard for the Wizards.
Yeah, it is. No question. I actually really love his game. And, you know, even a guy like Jaylen Brown comes in and he knocks down, you know, a three. And at that point, it was like you just throw your hands up. It's like they got it going. But yeah, they're a tough team to match up with. Everybody's had an issue matching up with them. You know, you made the point about beating them up on the glass, which is what Chicago did in those first two games. They also, with Rondo in those first two games, completely controlled the tempo of the game and didn't turn the ball over. And the Wizards only ended up with 13, but I think they only had three turnovers at halftime.
Yes.
So I think it was 10 in the second half, and probably six or seven of those 10 came in the first 6 to 7 minutes of the third quarter, which really, you know, went from 5 points up to, you know, double digits down. But I don't. This isn't one of those things where Scott Brooks goes back and has a lot of options defensively. You know, what do you do? Do you play, you know, if Morris is healthy, you play a lot more of Morris you know, to try to guard, especially to try to guard the pick and roll with Horford. And if it's not Morris, you're going to have to use Jason Smith. You know, Beal on Isaiah, I don't like Beal. To be honest with you, I don't like Beal or Wall, or I don't like either one of them on Isaiah Thomas. I was glad to see with Morris out, he started Oubre in the second half with Oubre on Isaiah Thomas. That may be the best matchup for the Wizards, but no matchup against Isaiah is real good. You know, it's going to be tough. The Wizards also really have to push pace after makes. You know, they got into the walking the ball up the court after makes, even in the third quarter when they were getting run. And you know, they ended up a lot of jump shots on the other end. Now they made a ton, but they're best when they get something quick on a quick set where they get something in transition. And Boston gets back a little bit on defense, but they can be had defensively. I think the Wizards are going to have to score 110, 115 in each one of these games with a low turnover count. That's going to be the key, low turnover count.
Yeah, I mean the Wizards had only 9 fast break points. I mean, typically that's not going to get it done.
No, the best part of that is the encouraging part of that is they scored 61 in the first half with I think 5 total fast break points. You know, so Boston's not as tough defensively as what they faced in the last week and a half, but at the same time they're a massive matchup problem for the Wizards defensively.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to the what of it all, as in what, if anything, can the Wizards do if Morris is limited or out for game two? Now, just looking at Twitter as we're talking here, Todd Dybas, who's always, of course, on this podcast, he said he talked to Morris, and Morris said, hell yeah, about playing in game two, and he said the swelling is way down, and yada, yada, yada. We'll see. So it sounds promising, but obviously, you know, you sprain your ankle as badly as it looked like he did, even if he plays. You know, who's to say how effective he is or how many minutes he can go? But with that said, you mentioned the idea of starting Oubre. You're probably right, especially what he can do defensively against Isaiah Thomas. It might be your best bet, so you maybe have to go there. But man, he's just like such a frustrating player at times. He gets lost defensively when he has to switch out. He did make a couple threes early, but his offense is sort of just typically all over the place. But that may be what they have to do on some level. You mentioned Jason Smith. He'll probably would have to play more, I think, almost regardless. But this is where it's so difficult to look at the Wizards because I don't know where else they could go. I mean, I'm almost to the point of saying, hey, can Chris McCullough play? I mean, I'm 100% kidding, I think. Right? I mean,
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't even given a thought that far down. Let me just say this. I'm not suggesting that Oubre start. I'm just suggesting, in key portions of the game that he's matched up against Isaiah Thomas. I will say this, that the Wizards have to change at least their mindset defensively in terms of getting super physical with Isaiah Thomas in game two. I don't know that it'll work. But they've got to get more physical, whether it's John or Bradley or Oubre or Otto. If you watch the first quarter, and it wasn't always on a switch either. Otto Porter, took some possessions on Isaiah Thomas, early in the game. They want more length, they want more size against him. The thing about Oubre is he's got the length, and he moves his feet much better than Porter does, but you gotta try to beat them up a little bit physically here. You can't let them, sort of have their way offensively. In the first quarter, the defense was okay, but they missed a lot of shots too. They missed a ton of open shots in the first quarter, and that's why the rebounding numbers, there was a massive difference, is they were missing shots early. You got off to that 16-0 lead. Most of those were just missed looks that they had that they didn't miss in the second half, but there's not a lot. Like, I mean, it's not that obvious, especially if players are thin and hampered a little bit, that you can do defensively. You gotta protect the ball offensively. You can't have 10 second half turnovers. That's 10 possessions in a game where you're not getting a shot. And against Boston, especially if they're shooting it that well, you're gonna pay for that. And you're gonna pay for 9 missed free throws in a game.
It's funny. I've been sort of pointing out the last several days or during the Atlanta series, like, hey, the team, the third best five-man unit in the entire NBA this year, with a minimum of 200 minutes in terms of net rating, is the one with Beal, Wall, Gortat, Otto, and Oubre, the one they used a lot during the first half of the year. Then they basically shut it down once they got Bogdanovich and really never go to it at all. With Morris out, that's basically what they had to go back to. And ironically, maybe this is a bad matchup for that, because in the first half, when you had Boston tried to hide Isaiah Thomas on Otto, because he can't guard Wall and Beal at all, and Otto did a good job, scored some, but did a good job crashing the boards. He had a double-double. But when Morris was out, I think they started moving Thomas more over to Oubre, or at least they could move to Oubre more, and Boston wants Oubre to shoot. I mean, they want him to
Sure.
ball with the ball in his hands, poor
Of course.
decision-making, poor shooting. So it's almost like I like that lineup, sort of. I'm glad to see it again. But maybe this is just the bad matchup, because to take advantage of Thomas's ideal, I think maybe what they have to do is almost say to John, hey, look, I know you're doing a million things already. You got to guard that guy. We got to put Bogdanovich on the court to give us more offense. You've got to guard Isaiah Thomas, do the best you can, and we'll beat them on the other end by scoring more.
Yeah. That's what they'll likely do. It's a tough matchup. Look, these games change so dramatically in the course of a series from one game until the next. I think the one thing you'll see them do is hopefully with Morris, when they have to, you go Morris on Horford, so he's involved in the pick and roll. Gortat really, really was taken advantage of today in that down the stretch. And I think they'll try to be physical with Isaiah Thomas, whether it's Wall or Beal or Porter or Oubre. I mean, they knocked his tooth out today, but that wasn't enough. And
Crazy.
in the fast break, the pace of a game, look, they got to miss shots. You got to get some turnovers and steals, and you didn't have a lot of those necessarily today, to run off of. But I can't stand after made buckets when the Wizards don't take a shot at taking it out of the net quickly, getting it to Wall and running the court, and at least, forcing them to run back even after made shots. I think we're at our best, and if we can answer, and there was that stretch there in the fourth quarter where we were answering each three with a made three, but you got to get the ball to the rim a little bit too. They didn't do that enough today.
All right, let's get to the why of it all, as in why am I still smiling despite the loss? Well, because I've been sick and tired of watching John Wall play with Brandon Jennings, and in the first half, Scott Brooks finally decided, no, we're not going to do that anymore. And then he had to do it in the second half, which is why maybe I shouldn't be smiling, because of the Morris injury, I suspect, as much as anything. But I was so happy to see Brooks finally get away from that. He just had Jennings and Wall sub in and out for each other. They only played 4 minutes together in the second half. Like I said, it came at a point where he was just trying to figure out anything to slow Boston down or change it up. But that pairing has gotten so annoying because Jennings, it's just an awful fit. As Todd would like me to mention to the world, when Jennings came in the first half, the Wizards were up like 16 or 15 or something like that. And with him on the court is when things went south. Where are you on the Brandon Jennings show? On the one hand, he's exciting. He's energetic. He keeps the pace going. He makes some great passes. But on the other hand, defensively, he's a wreck. His jump shot is broken. And it does seem like the bad runs often happen when he's on the court.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the way it was going in the regular season. He had a couple of really good moments in the last series. And by the way, some of those moments were defensively on Schroeder. And so, especially in game five, right? Game five. You know, who he's playing with and who he's paired with, that's funny because I haven't thought about that as much as clearly you have. You know, he was on the floor today with Wall because Beal and Wall were taking their rest with Jennings out there. I did love Friday night when Wall left the game and came right back in when they got it to 93-90. And that is, you know, closeout games, there's no rest or short rest. Those are the only options in those situations. And in a long series here, game one, you know, what were John's final minutes? It was less than 40 today, right? Probably less than 40 after whatever it was on Friday night. And there may have been, by the way, a little bit of you know, sort of hangover from what I think, you know, I don't know how much you've talked about this, Ben. I think it was the greatest closeout individual performance in a closeout game by any Wizard or Bullet ever, Friday night. He put on a show for me for the ages that we'll never forget. Game six in Atlanta and what he did in that fourth quarter, 19 in the fourth quarter, 13 consecutive, you know, to finish with 42. It's the first time we've seen him really in a spot like that do it. And there could have been a little bit of hangover from that today. You know, some of the sloppiness in the third quarter could have been that. I'm surprised, by the way, Toronto and Cleveland didn't play today and they didn't give the Wizards and Celtics the extra day and start the series tomorrow. I'm not sure why that happened. But it's a long series. The Wizards are going to win games in this series. I'd be shocked if they don't. I'd be shocked if this isn't a lengthy series. But it was a bad third quarter for sure. By the way, one other thing real quickly. Do you know the Celtics didn't score for the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, and they still ended up with 31 in the quarter? So they got 31 points in 8 minutes of play in the fourth quarter. That's too many.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how they started the game. But, well, you know, again, it was 16 to nothing, so they were missing a bunch of shots. They shot 51% from the field.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it was they scored 71 points in the second and third quarter combined.
Early on, like, you know, open jump shots for like Crowder, Bradley. I remember Isaiah Thomas missing an easy floater in the lane. They just, you know, they were missing shots, and you know, there's no offensive putbacks because, you know, Gortat's clearing the glass, Morris is clearing the glass, and the Wizards didn't miss a shot. And not miss a shot early. And, you know, I guarantee you, too, there was a little bit of that we can score at will against Boston. So, and it's going to be easier to score against Boston than it was in the six games against Atlanta. And that sometimes is dangerous. You know, that can be a little bit dangerous because, you know, on the other end, it's, you know, it's one of those mindsets where, you know, we may give up something, but we can get it on the other end. And then they got sloppy in the third quarter. I mean, you had in that third quarter Wall and Beal with like five or six combined turnovers in the first 6 minutes of the quarter. You know, that's an opportunity for, you know, 12 points plus, and they didn't even get a shot off.
Yeah, but you're definitely right. I mean, yeah, I'm sure when that first quarter, they're like, "Oh my Lord, look at this pick and roll offense. We couldn't do this
Right.
at all against Atlanta, and here we're getting buckets. This is going to be fun." And I agree with you on this. For this team in particular, it does feel sometimes when they get off to easy starts that sometimes that can get them to let their guard down a little bit, thinking that it's going to be there. But I want to circle back to what you said about Wall in the last game. I did praise him up and down that for that game, and I talked about it from the standpoint of there are all stars and there are superstars. He jumped that level. If he wasn't truly there already, he went to that level. That's a takeover game. It's the kind of game I mock Chris Webber for never doing in his career, who didn't want the ball in the last 5 minutes of a game. John Wall, from that moment of the chase down block on, was easily the best player and by a lot there. But I hadn't, but I saw what you wrote on 980.com about the all-time aspect of it. I hadn't really thought about that. I think you mentioned how, like, sort of Elvin Hayes in one of those game sevens back when the year they won the title was a big deal. But you're right about Wall. I mean, that was, it's only the first round of the playoffs and all that. He didn't hit the game-winning shot because he put the game away. But that level of performance, that's what you want to see out of your superstar player. And I think sometimes people don't recognize the difference between a guy who's an all-star and a guy who's next level. And for me, he definitely went next level with that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, historically, the Elvin Hayes performance in 79 against Atlanta is often considered one of the great individual performances in a playoff game by a Wizard. Gil had it in game five at Chicago, but nothing like what John did in the fourth quarter. And what was unique about it for him is that the buckets that he got at 93-90 after he blocked Schroeder's shot were the kinds of shots that we as Wizards fans sometimes cringe over, where no one touches the ball, everybody's standing around, and it's one-on-one, and it's John, creating where he hasn't really delivered more times than not. He got it to the rim on the first one. He got it to that spot where he's been knocking down that elbow jumper, especially in the last series. And those were two superstar playoff kinds of buckets in a fourth quarter. And then he went on a run of, 13 straight to close it out. That was special. It was really, I thought it was one of those things as I was watching it, I was like, this isn't just him going nuts in transition. He's taking over the game in the half court. That's what superstars do in the playoffs in the fourth quarter. We had never seen it in his career like what he did the other night. 19 in the fourth quarter, especially when they got to 93-90. 17 of those 19 came when he was out for 2 minutes and they made that big run, and then he took it over. I thought it was really special and it was fun to watch. And I know it's only the first round. That's a good point. Bobby Dandridge had a ridiculous game against the Spurs in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is an all-time performance as well. But I just thought John's was top, right there at the top of the list in closeout games.
But like, do you think people recognize that? Like, the game happened on a Friday night. They had a
Yeah, I know. I
quick
agree.
turnaround to Sunday. I feel like if, I don't know.
It's exactly why I decided to do something on my blog, just so that I wouldn't, I wanted to make the point that if you miss this on Friday night and this next series is getting ready to start right now and you haven't had a time to appreciate it, and I know we always get hung up in the moment of sort of speaking in hyperbole about, things that we've seen, but Wall's performance game six at Atlanta on Friday night is an all-timer for this franchise. And by the way, it's this franchise, because there aren't many of those to sort of compare against, certainly not, in recent memory. You got to be, in my age group, somewhere in your late 30s to 60s or 70s, somewhere in that range to ever really, you got to be in your 40s almost to remember the great bullet teams of the late 70s and what's, Elvin Hayes did and what Bobby Dandridge did in some of those games. But that was, how many times, superstars, 19 in a fourth quarter. You score 19 and probably assisted on a, he had 19, I think, of their 26 in the fourth quarter. And they were all unique for him, because usually he's, you know, in transition. These were half court buckets with big stakes on each of those possessions until they pulled away late.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, the one thing I've always liked about John and Bradley also, even a couple years ago when they were, you know, were truly puppies, that is that in the big moments they showed that eye of the tiger. They showed the bigger moments they were not afraid of. And like I said,
they aren't afraid. You're
Wentworth,
right.
Point to Blake Griffin, guys like that. They don't want the ball in late games, and you know, whatever. But they've wanted it, and John took it to another level there. And yeah, like I said, hopefully people remember that, and it doesn't just get brushed away. You know, the Wizards are still in this series. Let me not go crazy. It is one game, but depending on how this goes, hopefully people will remember that. Regardless.
Exactly.
All right, so you're listening to the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben standing here along with Kevin Sheehan from ESPN 980. You already know you're listening to Kevin on the radio every day, Monday to Friday. What is it, 6 to 10? No.
Yeah, 7 to 11.
7 to 11. Yeah, that's right. Galdi is in there.
5 to 7.
Yeah, you guys have to. I don't know how you get up in the morning every day. I'll just leave it at that. and, of course, follow him on Twitter at KevinS980. And, you know, if you don't already, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you go in there, leave a 5-star rating or review. It's good for us, helps other people find the podcast, and we want people to find this podcast, especially while the Wizards are going here. Let's get to the last one here, Kevin, on the who, what, where, when, why of it all, as in, who is the key for game two? I'll give you a second to ponder. I'm going to sort of go with the obvious, and that's John Wall, because we just praised him for how great he was at the end of that game. He played a hell of a game today. 20 points, 16 assists, 9 of 20 from the field. Now, he did have 8 turnovers. He had a lot of those turnovers in the third. So, you know, not going to give him a pass on that. But for the most part, he did well. But as I mentioned before, depending on what's up with Morris, I think they're going to need more offense out of the court. I think it's some level better for them if Bogdanovich is out there than Oubre. At least they can't play Oubre 30-something minutes if Morris is out, I don't think. So that means Wall's got to guard Thomas. I know that's not easy, but he's going to have to do it and really make that a focus. Let Beal carry the offense if as needed. He's got to do that. So I just can't point to anybody on the bench and say they are the key to the game, because honestly, I don't really know where you go. So I'll go Wall as, yep, he's going to have to be even better than he was today. Dial back the turnovers, play better D for them to get game two.
I think that's right. I mean, he's going to have to get out and transition more. And that means after makes too. I think that's really an important point. People always assume fast break points, you know, pace points, transition points after misses and turnovers. But the Wizards are one of those rare teams where they have a chance to take it out of the bucket and beat you back on the other end and get something easy or get something on one of their quick sets. And I really think that's the key. They're going to have to really – their best defense all year long has been their offense. And really forcing pace and changing the context of the game by scoring and being explosive and putting more pressure on the opponent to match on the other end. The Celtics really didn't have that pressure down the stretch because they built that lead. So I don't see a lot of answers defensively, and I also don't think hoping they miss shots is the answer either. I will say this. I think if Morris is hurt, I think Jason Smith's going to play a key role in game two on defense in particular, because I don't know how, when the Celtics play the lineup they played in the fourth quarter, with Horford in every single pick and roll, I don't know how they have Gortat involved in that. I think that's they've got to get him out of that. It's like a clear identification by Boston. We are going with whoever Gortat's guarding in the pick and roll with Isaiah Thomas, and that will start, you know, a process of which Isaiah scores, Horford scores, or Horford or Isaiah makes the pass to the open player when the defense collapses for an open look. And that's problematic for Washington. And I think Smith will be better than Gortat in that role. So he may play a huge role in game two if Morris is hurt.
And by the way, you mentioned Al Horford. He was one rebound shy of a triple-double, and most of that production, I think, came in the second half when they started pulling him further away from the basket.
Exactly.
Todd, and they just ran the offense through him a lot more.
Exactly. Well, I mean, what was his assist count? I didn't even look at it.
10 assists.
Yeah. See, that's the so many of those came then in that pick and roll when, it was really a pick and pop where he would extend out after Gortat tried to hedge a little bit on Isaiah, and there's Horford with an open shot, or defense rotates and somebody's wide open in the corner, and that's where Horford got a lot of those assists. And that's a problem. They space the floor so well, and they, in every, they had a lineup on the floor. Everybody could shoot it. Even when Jaylen Brown was in the game, I couldn't believe that he knocked down a three, and how many minutes did he play? Probably played 3 or 4 minutes, it seemed like, but it was, he had a crucial bucket and, two buckets, in fact, I think, in the game. But yeah, it's going to be tough, but these series, the unexpected is always there. It's weird the way it works out, and what you think is going to happen sometimes isn't what happens.
Absolutely.
I hope Morris is healthy, though. That will be huge.
I hope so. I mean, I've made this point on Twitter. Game one, 2015, John Wall busts his hand. He did come back and play in the series later, but it seems like everybody universally agrees, based on how that series went, if he doesn't get hurt, they win. I think a lot of people thought the Wizards could win this series even without home court advantage. I at least hope Morris is back so we can get, as best we can tell, that we get a fair assessment of what that would look like. If he can't go, it becomes harder to see how they can win when he's, over the course of a series if he can't go. So hopefully he's good to go, if nothing else, just so we don't have to keep going back in time and saying, boy, if only that hadn't happened.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tuesday night's huge because – you'd love to get the momentum of what they did on Friday night with a split coming home on Thursday and Sunday, I guess it is, to a great home crowd where they can try to protect home court. If they lose Tuesday night, it's going to be tough. They can always win in game five or game seven if they protect home court, and it could turn into one of those home court series all the way to a deciding game. But I feel like they need Tuesday night.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You go down 2-0 in a series, you got to win 4 out of the next 5. That becomes a challenge no matter what you're doing.
It would also be them on a 6-game roll after losing those first 2 games to Rondo. And I say to Rondo because that's essentially what happened, is Rondo won 2 games, in Boston, and then missed the rest of the series, and that changed the series.
Absolutely. All right, Kevin, I definitely appreciate it, man. Thank you for your patience earlier. Thanks for...
No, anytime, Ben. I love doing it.
Cool, man. All right, well, thanks.
All right.
Thanks to Kevin. Thanks to all you guys for listening. Back with another podcast on Monday. And until next time, see ya.
Everybody just Neal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Bobby Fry caught. Home drive. Off the shot. Dagger! Not ball.